right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Newborn Libertarian. This subject is drugs and guns, and I will not tell you, or maybe I will tell you, if I enjoy drugs and guns. You will find out by the end of this episode. And we have an ensemble cast. We're bringing back Christian and Chad. Hello, Christian and Chad.
Hello, Kim and Chad.
Chad, are you still in existence, sir?
Is Chad?
Yeah.
Ah, there you go.
Actually, performed to this episode with the lyrics song "Straight Outta Compton," but the N-word makes way too many appearances in that song for my comfort, given the whiteness of my skin. So I'm just gonna say hello, everybody.
Ooh, well, I guess.
That's nice of you.
I guess Thurman's not here for us to drop the N-bombs like we did in the white privilege episode. Anyway, we also have a new guest. We have Adam. And Adam, when you introduce yourself, why don't you just let us know your political background, where you came from, if you're a libertarian, and also tell us about yourself, what you do, what you like to do, hobbies, and let us get to know you.
I'm straight out of Oklahoma. I'm 31 years old. I first got into libertarianism. Actually, it's more anarchism whenever I was a teenager. And, as I got older, I thought I was Republican. And listening more and more to people like Rand Paul, Ron Paul, Gary Johnson, I started to realize that I'm more libertarian leaning and everything. So I gave up on Republican Party, and just ever since then, I've just been all about liberty. A lot of my hobbies include shooting, hunting, a lot of your more redneck stuff. So I definitely support guns. I'm anti-gun control in that area. As far as what I do, we're a developer for a hotel company. I've been doing that for about 2 years now. Before that, I worked for 5 years in the oil and gas industry. Hydraulic fracturing. There's plenty on that subject I could talk about, but no, we're talking about guns and drugs today, so yeah.
Right on.
Out of it with me.
Well, in interest of starting our subject, we are going to talk about drugs. And in order to get started on that subject, I wanted to give us a little platform to start out before we discuss. There was a book that was written called The War on Drugs is a War on Freedom by Vance. And, of course, as a lover of the Mises Institute, I always go there and search out. And David Gordon had written a very interesting and great article on it and pulled out some quotes also intersecting some Mises there. And I want to point out some stuff and just pulling out some history as well to put this in context, and I'm just going to pull out a few quotes and then get into the debate of this subject here. One of the quotes that came from Mises, and this was talking about opium, because I enjoy going back into history before we jump into the current times, because as everyone knows, history kind of repeats itself, and it's just, this isn't anything new. So one of the quotes that we have from Mises is, "Opium and morphine are certainly dangerous habit-forming drugs, but once the principle is admitted that it is the duty of the government to protect the individual against his own foolishness, no serious objections can be advanced against further encroachments. And why limit the government's benevolent providence to the protection of the individual's body only? Is not the harm a man can inflict on his mind and soul even more disastrous than any bodily evils? Why not prevent him from reading bad books and seeing bad plays? From looking at a bad painting and statues, from hearing bad music," and a couple other things that were brought up. Practical and utilitarian arguments against the drug war are important, but not as important as the moral arguments for the freedom to use or abuse drugs for freedom's sake. The moral case for drug freedom is simply the case for freedom. Freedom to use one's property as one sees fit. Freedom to enjoy the fruits of one's labor in whatever way one deems appropriate. Freedom to use one's body in the manner of one's choosing. Freedom to follow one's moral code. Freedom from being taxed to fund government tyranny. Freedom from government intrusion into one's personal freedom. Freedom to be left alone. And also, one other quote, alcohol abuse and heavy tobacco use are two of the leading causes of death in the United States. It seems rather ludicrous to advocate the outlawing of drugs and not the outlawing of alcohol and tobacco. So, with those quotes as some food for thought, I'll give you gentlemen the floor.
All right, so, so basically when it comes to drugs and alcohol or guns or anything that's been prohibited or some people would like to prohibit or ban, it really just comes down to property rights. And, you know, your right to do whatever you want with your body is not because you have a right to do drugs or you have a right to own guns specifically, or you have a right to own muskets, because the only guns that they had at the time when they wrote the Second Amendment, you know, were muskets and rifles. You just have a right to property. And the reason that they had to specifically outline this is that they had to make sure for those kindergartners out there who just want to ban everything that it was specifically stated, you know, your right to property also extends to guns and drugs. And even though there's not an amendment in the Bill of Rights that gives you a right to smoke pot, it's just a logical extension of property rights, really.
Yeah, I was listening to something last night that one of the guys was talking about when they wanted to institute alcohol, they did amend the United States Constitution because they knew at that time to pass something that insane and radical. They needed a constitutional amendment to do it. And yet, when Nixon declared the war on drugs in 68, they did it through, you know, the Controlled Substances Act. They didn't amend the Constitution this time around. And the fact that, you know, the fact that that was kind of just roundly accepted by the American population at the time is probably the biggest reason that we've got modern war on drugs. You know, these sort of legal creep issues, they always start out going after the thing that you hate the most, and they go after the thing you hate the second most, and then before you know it, they're going after all the things that you love. So, you know, initially it's, we got soldiers coming back from Vietnam, and they're addicted, and, you know, we got to get those heroin dealers, and, you know, the next thing you know, that you have to swipe your fucking ID to get Sudafed at a pharmacy.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
that's where we're at.
All right, guys, sorry we interrupted this podcast, this broadcast, because we now have Thurman.
Hey.
So, welcome to the show, Thurman. Nice to have you back again. We haven't had you on for a little bit because we keep doing podcasts at weird times. So, thank you for joining us on the debate about drugs and guns. And right now, we are on the subject of drugs.
All right, thank you for having me.
All right, sorry for interrupting you, Adam. So, go ahead with your point.
Yeah, so, we were talking about the war on drugs and appealing to people's feelings as far as non-understanding drugs and the people that use them and those type of things and being scared of them. And then it also, I think another point I was trying to make was about federal government issuing laws or domestic laws rather than the state, where it should be more of a state's right rather than a federal decision. If a state wants to criminalize marijuana, I personally don't agree with that, but I believe if the voters of that state make that decision, well, then that's the way it should be. But in the same sense, another state wants to decriminalize every drug. I think it's completely within a state's right to make that decision. I've never done any drugs. I've never even smoked marijuana. I've grown up around plenty of people. All my life, I've been around people that do. I've seen enough about the most extreme end of drug use and how it can destroy a person's life to how people can fully function on several drugs and you never know. I my personal decision is not to use them, but I don't want to hinder somebody else's freedom of what they put into their body and not how they live their life.
Yeah, well, I don't know what all you guys talked about earlier, but just on
my standpoint, in my view, just regulation, more regulation in general, it's not going to deter any crime, you know, with guns or with drugs. In fact, I would say, you know, I think I'm okay, honestly, with how things are being regulated right now. But I would say if it was any more, it would actually cause crime. It would actually cause drug use and gun use to go up, honestly. Because the cartel, you know, they make more money in firearms dealing than in drugs. And, you know, everybody knows, you know, criminals don't acquire guns or drugs, you know, abiding the law. So it's whatever. I don't think this regulation is going to do anything, honestly. It's not going to do anything new. And even if it did, I think it's so stupid that we're hiring more FBI agents. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, whatever they were doing before isn't working. So now we're spending more money to get more FBI agents on the thing, which an automated system already does. So I just don't understand that. That's all I have to say on the matter.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
Yeah, I kind of agree with Thurman there. It's the regulations that prohibition that really brings out the negative aspects of the crime. You know, people say things about drugs. Oh, it's because these people turn into criminals. Well, it's really the prohibition of drugs that turns them into criminals. It's the fact that now drugs are so expensive because they can't just buy them in the marketplace for really cheap. They have to resort to, you know, people without the skill sets have to acquire a whole lot of money, and the only way to do that is really to turn to a life of crime.
Yeah, that's correct. So one of the areas of I would say I have sort of personal life expertise that's kind of a topical subject right now, and if you listen to the Democratic debates, is one of the questions is the quote-unquote heroin epidemic that's, that is a new, allegedly a new problem in our country. And really, the heroin epidemic is just the opiate epidemic from 10 years ago in different shape. I mean, it's sort of run its course. They've gone ahead and they've cracked down on prescription drugs, and you've sent sort of all of these people, a lot of the middle class people, a lot of the people who were formerly skilled workers and middle class people that have had their lives destroyed by their doctors, not by their drug dealers, but by their doctors, for things like lower back pain and for things like for chronic pain issues for which we don't have great medical system, and a lot of these people have become heroin addicts. And so, you know, during the Democratic debate, they asked Hillary and they asked Bernie, well, what are you going to do about the heroin epidemic? And, Hillary says, well, we need more money. We need more money to do the things that we're already doing. We need $10 billion over 5 years to have more doctors and more treatment centers and more this and more that. And they're just... they're just missing the whole fucking point of the problem. And the point of the problem is that people's lives are being ruined, not because they're doing these drugs, because guess what? They're going to do them anyways. They were doing heroin because they can't afford oxy, because it's expensive as fuck. And it's destroyed their entire, like, you know, people's... people lose their entire savings account. They lose all of their asset. They pour all of this into doing drugs. That's during the time at which they're not actively trying to get better. And you cannot help a drug addict. And, you know, believe me, plenty of my friends have had their lives ruined by drugs. And if there's one thing I know from that experience, it's that nothing you do to try to help these people means a goddamn thing if they don't want to get better. If they're in the middle of their run with drugs and they don't want to stop, then nothing you do is going to make them stop, including locking them in prison.
You know, I want to jump in and say this. Third party observers don't know what's better for people.
Mm-hmm. Adam, you were saying something as well?
I agree with a lot of that. Now, I wonder what you would say as far as just selling these prescription medications over the counter. I know the heroin epidemic, they relate that to OxyContin and the shortage of OxyContin, I believe, is what they're relating it to. But if we actually sold these medications over the counter and let people make the decision themselves, they're getting the prescription meds either way. But the biggest issue is they have to go to a doctor, so they have to pay the doctor, and they have to pay a large amount. I'm often wondering what that would look like as far as selling prescription medications over the counter.
Yeah,
it's not...
I think if you were to sell them over the counter, really, what you're doing is you're just cutting down on the number of hoops that people have to jump through in order to get their drugs. And so you would see a lot less, in the same way that, 19-year-olds, when they get booze, because it's hard for them to get booze, what do? They binge drink once they get the booze, because it's really difficult for them to get it. Well, it's the same thing with junkies and pills. They've got to go through a lot of hoops to get them, and once they do, man, do they stuff their faces with them. Whereas if it's just a matter of walking down to the pharmacy, paying $15 or $20, which is all that this stuff would cost. These pills that go for $30 a pop on the streets cost like a fraction of a penny to make. So, if you had a legal market in them, you might be able to get high for about $20. It would be, I don't think you would see an explosion of drug use, because guess what? The non-junkies aren't going to just start popping pills every single day, because they already could do that if they wanted to by just going to their doctor and just getting scripts. It's not that hard to do, but the everybody, when you talk about like legalizing drugs, selling them over the counter, everybody's really worried about the non-junkies. Like the junkies are going to be the junkies, they're going to do what they're going to do, but everybody's worried about, well, what are the high school kids going to do, and what are the working middle class white people going to do if we just start selling oxycodone at the pharmacy? My supposition is to just start popping fistfuls of oxycodone.
It's kind of reference what I believe Furman was saying as far as the cartel, where you're taking money out of the cartel's hands by legalizing marijuana. I think you do the same thing with legalizing all drugs, including the prescription drugs and even your heroin and cocaine and all that. And I think one thing you're cutting out of the equation is the pusher. There's the guy that is saying, hey, I know you like that. Why don't you try this one? Why don't you try it? It'll get you better. It'll get you higher, and all this. And you may or may not see a decrease, but honestly, the way I see it, no matter what, there is drug use. We know that it's almost impossible to stop here. So why not try freedom? Why not just try to let people make their own decisions and doing that,
Yeah, again, gun laws do not deter crime. And, I'm glad that you brought up the cartel, because in Mexico, the only people who are allowed to have guns in Mexico are the police. And they have even higher gun, murder rates per capita and total than us. And so I think it's a near ludicrous idea to think that mass regulation is going to solve all our problems, because it's not. There's never going to be 0% of people who are hooked on drugs, and there's never going to be a zero amount of crime used with the guns. People are lives, like we just seen, I think it was like 3 weeks ago, somebody attacked somebody, some dude attacked several people in the subway with a knife. People are still going to jump off buildings to kill themselves. Depending on what drugs are like super illegal, they're just going to find some other drug. And it really sucks for me, because a lot of we're all arguing this as if this is a case about legality, but really this is an argument. What do you think about that?
One of the things that I always bring up when we talk about these things, because it's like we forget history at all times, yes, is prohibition. Because, oh man, when they tried to get rid of alcohol, man, it was just like, and it was one of the most fascinating things I've ever studied. And this was years ago, before I even became a libertarian, is just, you know, the amount, because the black market just thrives hardcore when you start trying to prohibit and ban anything and make laws against it, man. These people were, it was just like the new daring thing. It's just like, oh no, we can't have alcohol, man. You know, everything's got to be dry. People were making these clubs and stuff, you know, just basically people, you know, it would be word of mouth. You know, they'd have these clubs and just making these crazy things like wood alcohol and stuff. And these things would just notoriously make people blind or they would die. And that was just part of the thrill. People would know this stuff. You know, people were like, oh man, people are going blind and some people be dead. And it was just, you knew that, but that was part of the thrill. And it was crazy. People were doing it. So what you end up doing by trying to prohibit and like regulate and make laws against it is that people start trying to make their own stuff, and that starts driving people to make drugs and things that have sort of, you know, no regulation, no, you know, it becomes poisonous. People are just putting stuff in it because they just know, oh, now the black market's thriving. You know, people want this stuff, so I'm going to start making money, you know, and since these laws are put in place, now the people that they're saying, oh, you know, are taking advantage of teens and people who are impressionable, you know, that would be doing these drugs. And we have to make these laws to stop these people from taking advantage of the impressionable people. You know, we have to put these laws in place to protect them. Well, now that you put the laws in place, the people who would take advantage that you think you're taking out of the equation by making the laws, no, actually putting the laws in place has made these people that you were trying to stop all of a sudden take advantage of these people, because now they're just making all these things and putting stuff in that are dangerous to people, and making things that, you know, just anything to get these people high, because that's the point. Now they want to get high, they want a thrill, and they're like, well, we can just put whatever the hell we want in this because it's going to produce that high. And then you start getting things like, you know, like wood alcohol and that stuff back in the day, and people are just going to do it because it's prohibited, and they just know they want to get high.
The new version of that is the designer drugs that are coming out of China. You know, the K2, there's a new one called, they call it Flaca. It's, you know, these chemicals that are, you know, just poured on fake marijuana. Poured it, you know, it and sold it like the Quickie Mart. Of course, you know, they're dangerous as fuck because they're not studied for use in humans. They're not really illegal, but they're also not fully legal. And you know, so of course, like, you know, in Florida, they're trying to pass a law right now to just outright ban all designer drugs, like, up front. Because the way that they have to do these things now is there's a designer drug called 2CA. So they banned 2CA, so the guys in China change, you know, one little loop in the molecule, so it's now called 2CB, and it's slightly different. And it goes all the way down the alphabet, and it's a cat and mouse game, and, you know, it does effectively nothing, you know, and you end up with, you know, teenage kids freaking out off these fucking designer drugs that are made in labs in China that, you know, there's no oversight. It's history repeating itself. It's wood alcohol, it's moonshine all over again. And of course the response isn't, well, let's look at history, let's see if this has ever worked anywhere. It's, no, we just gotta fucking ban everything. We need DEA agents at every school, and we're gonna kick in more doors, and we're gonna shoot more dogs, and we're just gonna fuck all this shit.
Well, there's no accountability, basically, for the producers of these drugs, for the consumer, when it's kind of in a black market setting. You know, I can go on Yelp when I have bad service at some restaurant and say, hey, you know, this restaurant sucks, their service is terrible. But you can't just go on Facebook and post, hey, my drug dealer, you know, he doesn't arrive on time, and his drugs are really crappy, and it's not what I thought it was, because you'll be arrested.
And you just got to have my arm fell off.
My arm fell off.
Not because there's no accountability, you know, for fraud or in the courts or to be intimidated into doing different things. You know, whether the court should be public or private, you can't take them to the court anyway, because if you take this, if some woman, some meth head takes her dealer to court because, you know, the meth was impure and it didn't taste as good this time. I don't know how they do meth. They eat it. I don't know. But, yeah, she'll be arrested because you can't do it anyway. So there, the people are...
Everybody carries guns and knives with them during drug transactions because you have to be your own law enforcement. There is no one to protect you. There is no system to fall back on. So the only system that you have is force.
Yeah, because it's basically, not only is it illegal to deal, it's illegal to buy, and it's illegal to protect these kind of people. So it's kind of, by trying to ban this, they've, you know, like you said, the druggies are still going to be druggies, and it's just now they're druggies with no protection at all.
And just to kind of iterate on that, I mean, you have these just all the people pouring local market, and you know that, so people don't really have as much of an option to go and buy from who they want. You know, they might only have one option in their, you know, in their neighborhood or in their local town or whatever. So I think applying free market principles to that, and you know, getting rid of all these you know, dishonest, you know, the corner of the market, you might end up with a better product, safer products, and it's cheaper for sure.
Even if you're a statist, don't you want these motherfuckers paying taxes? Because guess what? They're not paying taxes right now. They're collecting checks from the government while they're making hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars in cash.
Yeah, Bernie Sanders, why don't you get up on that? I bet you'd be making bank for your free school.
I think you have to stand up for marijuana legalization.
On all the drug dealers and take all of their money.
Yeah, never mind. Don't tax that.
But the statist argument is that it puts a drain on the social welfare system if you allow, so therefore we must ban drugs. Because apparently, chaos.
Well, I think the marijuana sales in Colorado might beg to differ on the social welfare drain argument. You know, because they haven't really seen hardly any negative consequences from legalized weed. And, you know, as much as I want legalized heroin and legalized everything, because I think the downside would be very, very minor and the upside would be tremendous. Like, the legalized weed is the one where you have to smack yourself in the face and go, like, what the fuck are we doing? Like, nobody's ever died from this. Nobody's ever died from it. It's not real. There's no good argument. I don't know if any of you have ever seen the documentary on Netflix, it's the second weed documentary, I think it's called like The Project or something, it's a real popular weed documentary on Netflix, but it's one of those things where they try to give every good argument for prohibition, and none of them hold up. Like, absolutely none of them hold up whatsoever. And the documentary opens with, I think, something that if you're pro-drug war and you haven't seen one of these, you're just an irresponsible fuck. But, you know, if anybody hasn't seen the videos of a no-knock drug raid, just go check them out. They're all over YouTube.
Because they always get the right house.
Oh, yeah. They always shoot the fucking dog in front of the children.
Yeah, I know, right? What was it in Georgia where a SWAT team threw a flashbang grenade into a baby's playpen? That was happening a few years back.
Yeah, it's pure insanity.
Now, I just have a question because I think, well, we're about 30 minutes in and I'm going to have to table this one and move on to gun control. But seeing as the results of this war on drugs, of course, is just driven up the amount of drugs and put lots of guns in the hands of the cartel, and just been chaos. So for the people out there that probably think it's crazy as heck because libertarians are like, oh, just legalize it all. What argument just going to go one by one, and I'm just going to, as I go through, say everybody's name, and then you give me your argument for how in the world would you plead your case to everyone who's listening that doesn't actually, you know, exactly understand the stance of legalizing. I'm going to say, for your ending and closing statements, pleading your case in the debate of what would be the benefits of legalizing or your measures and why would this be good and how they would feel safe, say their children, their family, and the people, how this would benefit them in the long run and how just make this clear, this case clear to them, why this would be a good idea. And I'm going to start with Adam because, you know, I'm just going to start with Adam because he's the guest. So the rest of you guys can suck it.
Okay. So, you know, I would start off, I believe it was mentioned earlier, you commonly hear the argument that the Second Amendment doesn't apply to automatic rifles, and the Founding Fathers had no idea what weapons would become today. And that is completely false, actually. I mean, I've done some research on older rifles. Actually, Thomas Jefferson allegedly owned two of these rifles called the Gironde Air Rifle. That's a pneumatic rifle. It was in service 1780 to 1815. It shot a 46 caliber ball, just 22 ball capacity, and it was nearly silent. This thing shot about 22 shots a minute. That was one of the earlier automatic guns. There was another one called a puckle gun, patented in 1718. It's the earliest gun referred to as a machine gun. It was capable of firing 63 shots in 7 minutes, and it was a flintlock gun. There's several other guns. The idea that automatic weapons were not in the Founding Fathers' minds is completely false. I guess Thomas Jefferson on two of these Gironde air rifles, gave one to Lewis and Clark whenever they explored the Louisiana Purchase. And I can't remember if it was this weapon or if it was another one that they attempted to get commissioned for the Revolutionary Army. So that's usually one of the first arguments you'll hear people make against, in sports and controls, that doesn't apply to weapons of today. I mean, it actually does. It applies to all weapons. And even the limits we already have as far as like caliber size and things like that, I believe the highest that a private person can carry without special licenses and things like that is a 50 caliber. Modern muskets fire 70 caliber balls. So the limits that we have today are just ridiculous compared to what the Founding Fathers originally meant whenever they wanted the people to keep their arms. I could talk about this forever, but I don't want to take up too much time. If anybody has anything else there on that.
Wait, is this going in the direction of why we should legalize drugs?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we were talking about guns already.
That's where we're going next. I mean, that was a good case. Now we know where you stand on that one.
Hello?
Yep, still here.
Okay. As far as legalizing drugs, I mean, it's because it's the fucking right thing to do. Just leave people alone and let them make their own decisions. It's not the government's job to protect people from themselves. Let them learn their lessons, their own way. I think education as far as what can happen when using drugs is the answer to that problem. Not trying to regulate it and making it more complicated and more dangerous to acquire drugs.
All right. Next up, Chad.
All right. So, in my closing argument for why we need to legalize drugs, I would like to address an argument that sits subtly below the surface of most of the claims about drugs and drug addiction that is just scientifically absolutely not true. And that's the idea that somehow people with drug problems, people who suffer from addiction, have some sort of deficit of character, that they're just lazy people, that they're just bad people, that, you know, they're not like you and I. They're the other people. And so because they are less good, less virtuous, less upstanding than us, it's okay for us to treat them like, you know, like they are less than us, like less than humans, like less than citizens. Like, it's okay for us to kick in their doors, shoot their dogs, scare their children, because they might be doing something that's not good for them. So that argument is absolute bullshit. You know, all you have to do is look at any of the science on drugs and drug addiction to understand that there is no moral element involved in it. Nobody becomes a drug addict because they are too far away from Jesus. Nobody successfully prays their drug addiction away. The ideas that sit behind the 12-step programs where you have to find a higher power and you have to turn your life over to that higher power are crap. They work for about 10% of people, but those 10% of people likely would have found something else to help their drug problems. The people that wind up doing drugs are not significantly different from those that pick up the drug once and put it down the next day. They're, you know, the people who put it down the next day aren't better, they're not worse, they're just different. They have different brains, just like some of us are born with black skin, some of us are born with white skin. We're all different, and we have to acknowledge those differences, and we have to stop moralizing those differences. Because as soon as we start moralizing those differences, we're giving ourselves permission to treat one another like shit. And we shouldn't do that. We should treat one another like human beings. We should respect the differences and the challenges that each and every one of us is born with. Some of us are born with really high IQs and we achieve great things. Some of us aren't. You know, some of us aren't. And that's genetics and that's biology. And that's something that we have to acknowledge and we have to not moralize. People who are dumb are not dumb because they did bad things in a former life. There is no deserve it. There is no doesn't deserve it. It is what it is. And so we have to, being practical people and being people who are interested in facts and science, we have to deal with it like that. And so we have to deal with drug addiction like what it is. It's a set of people whose brains are slightly different than everybody else. And so maybe they're not as good at moderating their actions. Does that make them criminals? No, it doesn't. Any more than being born, you know, slightly less than average intelligence or being born with a certain type of hair color, a certain type of skin color, makes you a criminal. So, you know, that would be my biggest argument for why we absolutely need to legalize drugs and stop treating people who just are different than you and I like they're criminals. Because guess what? They're not criminals to begin with. But as soon as we start cracking down with the boots of prohibition, we sure as hell succeed in turning them into criminals.
All right, Thurman?
Well, damn, Chad, go on. I think I like you way more now. well, honestly, like Chad said, I think that there just needs to be much more education on the fact, for, you know, and for both sides, of course, because it can't hurt. As far as addiction goes, I think we all agree that it's more of a medical thing rather than a moral or criminal thing. And if everything was legalized, honestly, I think addiction rates would go down. I think crime would go down. I think, well, obviously it would. There's just, you know, just look at, you know, case in point, you know, like somebody said earlier before, just look at what Colorado and Washington is doing. Look at other places, you know, historically that have actually decriminalized drug laws. You know, just look at what they're doing and actually just look into things. Because it's,
I think it's very ludicrous for us as a country to still think that drugs are inherently bad. You know, that's the thing that I want to get away from. You know, nothing is inherently bad. You know, not fracking or, you know, whatever. So that's all I have to say on the matter.
And Christian.
Yeah, so I think they all kind of hit on aspects I wanted to talk about of it. Doing drugs, putting heroin or marijuana into your body is only a crime because the law says it's a crime. So when people come at you and say, oh, well, you know, drugs makes me less safe because if someone else does it, then they become a criminal. Well, you know, just ingesting drugs into your body doesn't make you a criminal. It's what you do to secure that fix that makes you a criminal. And if you're stealing other people's property, then it makes you a criminal. If you're going to drive up the price of drugs because you're sending it into the black market, people are going to do radical things because they don't have the skill sets to just come upon those, the fix as easy as they could otherwise. So they've got to turn to a life of crime and other things. From the argument is, oh, it's bad for them and we have to save them from ourselves. Well, that's just kind of an arbitrary stopping point if you're going to draw it at drugs. You know what else could kill you? Walking across the street, not putting on sunscreen when you go to the beach and gets, you know, cancer, smoking, and anything is really bad for you. If you want a zero-risk life, then you can just stay inside all day and do nothing. It's just an arbitrary stopping point there. The other point is that, well, if they become addicted and then I have to pay for their medical assistance, well, what you're really paying for is you're paying for bloated police departments to militarize, to have the means to come after your means of enjoyment when all of a sudden when some other busybody decides to turn on you. You're paying to prosecute these people, you're paying to keep them in jail for a long time, for most of them, and you're paying for cops to either maybe do their job or not do their job. There's a lot more money to be gained by not prosecuting these people and just letting them do what they will than there is just trying to criminalize them because of some boogeyman that someone painted it out to be.
Right on. Well put, everyone. I'm convinced, but I think I was convinced beforehand, so that's cheating. All right. Well,
yeah, cheater.
We'll move on to gun control. But not until we take a break for this special message. Welcome to Surviving Socialism. You can call me Cam Cam for now. I'd rather not use my real name at the moment, considering that I'll be sharing a good deal about work situations and so forth. Let me introduce myself a little. I am an American that has been living in socialist Norway for the past 9+ years. I am 32 years old, and you could call me a libertarian before you could call me anything else. I finally have made the push to move out of this nightmare and try my hand back in the good old US of A. In 3 months' time, I'll be gone, and gone forever. No longer will I have piles of Norwegian lazies clinging to my back. My time here has been incredibly frustrating, as dealing with socialism is for any hard worker attempting to reach his or her goals. Up until now, I have recalled these experiences one by one occasionally, whenever asked, or the topic of socialism has come up. I've realized how little of an effect I have been having. What I need is a place to describe these experiences where I can send people. My memory is fickle, and I just don't trust that I'll have the ability to convey my experiences, say, 10 years down the road. My goal is simple, to convey to anyone willing to read the practical examples of living with socialism. I realize that most people have no idea what actually daily socialistic living is like. They hear ideas of Bernie Sanders or conversations among progressives, but they have no idea the frustrations one actually encounters. I intend to tell them. Some examples are current, my last days here in the country, but I also intend to recall past experiences and tell those as well. Remember, I am no author, and I just don't have the time to dig up law. These will be candid examples of my day-to-day life here. Some examples might bore, others will hopefully make your chins drop. I want the reader to come away with the crystal clear opinion that I never want to live that way. Onward to my most recent example, which you will find in my next post. Thanks for reading. Let's wake up the people and show them that this parasitic dependency on both the state and others' hard work not only isn't sustainable, but downright wasteful and morally wrong. The truth is simple. We all deserve better than what socialism has to offer. Mr. Fix-It. One of my jobs is a full-time position as a preschool teacher. This is a state-run preschool, as most are in the country. You see, Norwegians go by the motto, each child shall have a spot in a preschool. They are heavily subsidized. In our country, and others, there are fix-it folks that travel from state-run enterprises to fix whatever it is that may be broken. Well, that's the idea anyways. The trouble is that they can't possibly keep up with the never-ending jobs to do. There aren't either enough of them. Or the ones that they have aren't motivated to do their jobs quickly. I'm not sure which. This is how the system works. I go to work and notice, say, a light bulb burned out. Well, you're probably thinking, well then, Cam, you probably then replace the burned out light bulb with a shiny new one, and problem solved. No, sir, that is not what I do. I rather go to the stack of papers located in the break room and fill out a form detailing the nature of my issue and requesting a Mr. Fit-It to come and relieve me of my plight, even for a burned out light bulb. In fact, when I was still fresh, I went to change the light bulb myself. I was rebuked. How dare I? I cannot do that on my own. Why? That is someone else's job. So I changed my malevolent ways and resigned myself to changing that darn light bulb the proper way. That is, by filling out paperwork and sometimes waiting up to 2 to 3 days for that light bulb to be changed. No, I am not being jocular. I have honestly waited several days for a light bulb to be changed. Well, it didn't affect me much, actually, but it did the children. That lonely, burned-out bulb was in fact the children's bathroom. Those poor little socialists were forced to relieve themselves in the pitch-black dark. That was several years ago. Let's fast forward to the beginning of this current week. On January 11th, I came to work on the early shift to find that the walk-in refrigerator wasn't working and needed to be repaired. Keep in mind that this is the cache that contains the food that will feed circa 50 children over the course of a week or so. That's a lot of food, milk, and other odds and ends. Now, it wasn't working. This time, however, we were able to call Mr. Fixit and told him of our exigent matter, and he actually came the very same day. Success? No, not quite. He informed us that he wouldn't be able to repair our fridge until Thursday. This was Monday, remember? What we were to do with a week's worth of food for a small army of pint-sized socialists, you may ask? Well, it being winter, we had to store it outside. But where would we keep it, safe from the birds and the beasts? Well, a big old container, of course. Today is Thursday, I should add, and the fridge still is in disrepair. Luckily, we will have moved locations to another preschool while ours is renovated. Next week, I shall experience the luxury of perfectly chilled food again. Check out survivingsocialism.blogspot.com. Just like the first segment, I'll start out with a little bit of a background on this one, because, of course, when I come at it, of course, we talk about the Second Amendment, and I think a lot of people get this one all sorts of wrong when they come at it. The Second Amendment, of course, says, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And we get the arguments all over the place, especially from the left, that, you know, it's about hunting and all that sort of stuff. And then people who actually take the time to think about the Constitution, we're just like, what, people are ridiculous. How does this make any sense? That is not at all what the original intent was. For it, of course, well-regulated militia, they were talking about, you know, well-bodied, abled men, you know, basically called up to rise up, you know, against tyranny. And what kind of tyranny were we talking about? Governmental tyranny, you know. And me being the English major nerd that I am, you know, one of those people involved back in the day when it comes to the Second Amendment was Noah Webster. And Webster, does that sound familiar? Merriam-Webster Dictionary. So, one of the quotes on the Second Amendment comes from Noah Webster. One of the things he said was, "Before a standing army can rule, the people must be disarmed, as they are in almost every kingdom of Europe. The supreme power in America cannot enforce unjust laws by the sword, because the whole body of the people are armed, and constitute a force superior to any bands of regular troops that can be, on any pretense, raised in the United States. A military force at the command of Congress can execute no laws, but such as the people perceive to be just and constitutional. For they will process the power, and jealousy will instantly inspire the inclination to resist the execution of a law which appears to them unjust and oppressive." And this was from Noah Webster and an examination into the leading principles of the Federal Constitution, 1787. And this was a pamphlet aimed at swaying Pennsylvania toward ratification. And so that gives us a little background. Of course, Noah Webster, he basically, you know, wrote a textbook that was called Grammatical Institute of the English Language, and I won't go too much into his history, but so that people understand that when he was talking about the militia, he knew what he was talking about. It was a standing army of people who weren't a military. These people could be possibly called into military-like service. So when we were talking about the Second Amendment people, they were not talking about an actual military people who were trained in the military, literally a standing army. And people were talking about the tyranny of a government. These people didn't want to be in a situation where they were fighting tyranny like that in a war. They wanted standing people. So no, nobody's misinterpreting the Constitution when they're talking about a militia. So there you go. There's a history on that. And also, I want to... Huh? What was that?
And now militias are terrorists, right? At least that's what Twitter and the news taught me.
Yes.
So we can't... There are no more militias, because if you want to raise a militia... they're going to deem you terrorists.
Yes, we'll get into that. We'll get into that. Just wait a second. There you go. We'll get into that.
Wait, darn you.
Yeah, darn you. You wait. Anyway, but moving on from the history of then, just so we get some context, because we're going to move into that. Now, of course, we had Obama talking about, you know, all the gun violence we've had, shootings and all this sorts of things. And we need to take away the guns. Because apparently all of us crazies who like the Second Amendment want to keep our guns, you know, we want to do it for hunting purposes, you know, and, you know, that's why we don't want our guns taken away. But of course, a lot of these shootings, everybody has noticed, has happened in gun-free zones, because nobody just goes up to a gun store or anywhere like a shooting range and starts shooting at people. That would just be stupid, because that gives people an advantage, you know? And so we can talk about all the stupid loop, like gun show loopholes and stuff, and all that other stuff. So with the context of all of that in the past, I just want to talk about the Second Amendment and clear all that crap up, and then now I'll give the floor to you guys. So Chad, since you already started, go ahead.
All right, so I mean there's a number of places to start on this, I think I'm going to start with the gun show loophole that you just mentioned. That's one of Barack Obama's favorite things to talk about. The gun show loophole is essentially something invented by the government to have, you know, have a subject to attack. So if I want to sell my car to another person, another citizen, do I need a license and do I need to do a background check on the person that's going to buy my car? Well, no, I don't. That's not required, because it's a private seller to private seller transaction. But you can kill just as many, if not more, people with a car, if that's your intention, as you can with a gun. Through New York City, and you want to hit the gas real hard and plow through a crowd of pedestrians, you can easily kill 10, 12, 11 people. Does that mean that we need to start taking out background checks on cars every time somebody wants to sell a used car to another person? Well, no, that's fucking ridiculous. Of course we don't want to do that. That's such an arbitrary imposition of, you know, of government into an area where they can do almost no good. And the other area that I kind of want to start out with on this, and it's something that I was thinking about earlier as we were talking about this before we
started the podcast, but somebody like Bernie Sanders' position on we should allow guns in rural areas, but the difference in gun ownership in urban areas, that's different. And what I read in that statement between the politics speak is that's a very thinly veiled racist statement, because when he says urban, he means black, and when he says rural, he means white. And I think that's ludicrous that we would craft a gun control policy that attempts to keep the guns out of the hands of black people and yet allows white people to keep their guns. That's insane to me, because that, if you want to pretend like you're an advocate of the rights of African Americans, what are black people supposed to do to protect themselves from criminals? If you want to make gun-free zones, first of all, you're going to get a whole lot more Paris-style shootings where you don't get 10, 12 people killed, you get 150 people killed. But second of all, like that's American politics for you in a nutshell, is the left, which ostensibly pretends to champion the Americans, when it comes to this, they really want to get the guns out of the hands of black Americans, because the white people on the left hate the black people on the left.
And also, if I am a criminal who somehow got a hold of a gun illegally, the first place I'm going to go shoot up if I'm angry is a gun-free zone. Just saying. So, next up, I think I will choose Thurman. What do you got to say?
Well, both great points. Completely agree. Obviously, our founding fathers in the Second Amendment, obviously, they wanted a little bit of regulation, which I think we don't necessarily need the government. I mean, regulating, but I don't think they limited to, people who have guns should strictly be in a militia. Like, I think Chad said everything that I wanted to say for the most part. I wouldn't necessarily dwell too hard on the whole racial thing, but as far as what it is right now, where our regulation is, I'm okay with it. You know what I mean? Whatever. But in all honesty, according to the CDC, like the rates of death that are used by guns, they're very minuscule. They're so low that really all this rhetoric, it doesn't matter. And honestly, I get offended when people try to appeal to my emotion, appeal to my by pathos. So, everything that we've seen in this, the only reason we bring gun control up is because of the mass shootings. There's so many mass shootings, there's almost two every day, whatever. I don't really care. One guy, he killed 20 people, 20 kids with a handgun, It wasn't with an AK. It wasn't with an assault rifle. More recently, San Bernardino, 2 people, 14 people, so it's like 7 people a person. It doesn't really mean anything. These things are happening so relatively little that it shouldn't be as big as it is. People are exacerbating the facts, and it's too much of an emotional thing. That's all I have to say on the matter.
And my favorite is that, they always take like a small segment, and if you look at like the entire country's like gun violence rates, the amount of like gun ownership is extremely, extremely high. Like the rates are pretty crazy right about now. What was that?
I have something.
Yeah, go ahead.
If I hear another goddamn politician after one of these mass shootings use the word semi-automatic, and they're trying to suggest that somehow is not the default setting for a pistol, I will lose my mind. Because they never come out and say, well, no, we need to bring back the single-shot pistols that Captain Blackbeard used in Pirates of the Caribbean. It's those types. But they're using the word semi-automatic, and they're putting the emphasis on automatic so that people who don't know what the hell they're talking about think somehow semi-automatic means, like, three-round burst, or means, like, you know, limited fully automatic. That's not at all what semi-automatic means, and anybody that's ever shot a gun knows that semi-automatic is basically as many shots as you can trigger, you know, one, two, three, four. It's not three-round burst, it's not fully auto. Those are both more or less illegal. It's very, very difficult to get. And very rare, even with something like the San Bernardino shooting free, you see the shootings done with an AK. I mean, yes, you can go down to your local gun store and buy an AK-47 assault rifle that shoots single round shots. And it's not particularly more or less effective than the traditional Glickmaster hunting rifle or half a dozen other hunting rifles. It's certainly not as effective in close quarters as a combat-type shotgun, which you can get at most gun stores for just terminology, like magazine and automatic.
Well, the problem is they use that as a scare tactic because, you know, you have to continue to pull the trigger. It's not like, you know, a movie clip where, you know, you're just blasting people like an alarming rate. And then when you try to bring that up, they start to argue, well, you know, that it doesn't matter. People are still dying. I'm like, well, if it doesn't matter to you, stop trying to use this crazy, trumped up, you know, language to scare people. If your point is that, you know, you're scared of the violence and this is killing people, stop trying to freak them out with your crazy rhetoric. You know, just get to the point that's solid, and you're just proving right now that you are just trying to scare the pants off people. And stop trying to use your crazy rhetoric to push your agenda onto people. You know, use some education, because that's a problem. We need to be educating people on these sorts of things. And so we can move this on. Adam, do you want to bring up your points next?
Yeah, so just kind of reiterate what I was saying earlier about the definition of automatic compared to semi-automatic. I do think education of the public as far as what they are actually talking about will take a significant difference, because, you know, people do think that these mass shootings are committed with automatic rifles. They think that we need to ban automatic rifles. They just think, forget that those are already banned. They're banned in the 1930s. You can buy one with a license if you have a special license to buy one. But these mass shootings aren't even being committed with the guns that they're trying to ban. And instead, they're replacing it with semi-automatic rifles that just look scary. And that's just it's ludicrous, I think. You know, and I know you brought Mary Webster's earlier in that using definitions of things to describe what they were trying to say with the Second Amendment. And I hope that's the definition. You know, they say still not being friends. They said, look, we're not really trying to take this off. We just want to limit it. And the definition of infringement is an act though to limit or undermine the use of guns. I mean, that's the bearing of arms. And so any regulation on proper possession or purchase is an infringement, in my opinion. So I think a lot of it is education, not only in what types of guns that they're talking about, but also just gun safety in general, and to understand this. I mean, falling over gun safety accidents that happen near as often. I mean, you can, there's so much that can be done to cut down gun violence.
You know, I think education is definitely key, and what is scary is that people don't even know what a word means these days, man. Well, geez. Apparently they don't use a dictionary in school anymore. It's so easy you can even Google a damn definition these days. You don't know what infringement means. you don't know what a militia means, you could Google the damn definition, Merriam-Webster, Oxford Dictionary or something. We're not talking about looking it up and just seeing what Google says at the top. Merriam-Webster, yeah, pull the dictionary off your damn shelf and look these words up, people. Educate yourselves. Christian?
Yep.
So, your points?
Yes. Okay, so, yeah, there are a lot of points here. One of them is the well-regulated militia thing. Well, who decides what a well-regulated militia is? It doesn't expressly state that in the Constitution, what is a well-regulated militia. It's commonly understood a militia is outside of the government. So who says that the government even has any duty to regulate this well-regulated militia? And who says it can't be well-regulated by the people who are in it? The second thing is, you know, saying that, oh, the founders couldn't have thought of semiotic weapons, it's also stupid. That's like saying we shouldn't have freedom of speech because the founder online because the founders couldn't have imagined the internet. That's just it's a stupid argument, and it
thank you, Christian.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's just really ridiculous. The third thing is, you know, anyone who exists outside of a government, or we want to say, oh, you know, militias are terrorists. Well, that's kind of what they do whenever they come up with a militia who has an agenda that's not in lockstep with the United States government, whether it be the people in Oregon, whether it be some redneck guy with a, you know, who decides to take part in a militia, or whether it be some radical jihadist in the Middle East. If you are an armed group of people and you do not stand in lockstep with the United States government, you are a terrorist. The third thing where people say, you know, maybe we should take guns out of the hand of the mentally disabled or if you're on a no-fly list. Well, the people who get to decide that are ultimately the people who are going to be writing the law. It's going to be very subjective, and basically, if they don't like you, they will put you on that list. If they deem that you're mentally ill or you're a threat or you should be on a watch list because you espouse ideas relating to freedom and liberty, like the Southern Poverty Law Center or something, would like to have people believe that, you know, we'd be terrorists just for talking about this kind of stuff, then we should have our guns taken away, which is, you know, stupid. At the end of the day, it comes down to me. People need to be able to defend themselves and defend themselves when the cops aren't there to defend themselves or when the cops won't defend you. You know, for instance, you know, they talk a lot about the social contract, especially people on the left, that, oh, you know, you pay your taxes and then you get all these other services. Well, if I got shot in the head 5 minutes from now and the cops weren't there to stop it, I was just paying taxes my whole life for the cops not to uphold their end of the social bargain. So no one can really hold them accountable. So I'm better off protecting myself and protecting my family than I am relying on someone else to do it. And really the biggest point is it's just a property rights issue. You know, it doesn't matter if it's a semi-automatic, a fully automatic, an AK-47, an Uzi, Sidewinder missiles, nothing. If you determine that you want to own that property and you want to set aside the resources and you want to serve your fellow man to gain those resources and buy those things, that's your prerogative to do so. As long as you know, don't harm anyone else while you do it, you know. If I had an AK-47 hanging up on my wall and I just left it there for one day, it still would not do as much damage as car accidents do in one day in the United States. It's just a boogeyman for some more people to grab the means of self-defense and for status to continually expand their own power.
So, just a question. So, anybody who is determined to be maybe mentally ill or possibly has committed a crime that encroached on somebody's liberty and property and freedom, should they possibly be tried by a jury of their peers as opposed to just whatever the people creating the laws or the government decides? Would that be a way to, say, possibly keep guns out of the hands of people who actually really did commit an actual crime, as in maybe taking a life or encroaching on somebody's property in a way that is threatening? What would you say about that?
Well, the only thing you can do is try people, you know, in front of a court of their peers. You can't, if you decide to blanket, take away a law or do something, you know, the criminals or the mentally ill, they don't care. They're not just going to obey all the laws all of a sudden. All you're really taking the means of defense out of people who do the right thing anyway, and who just want to be left alone. You'd still have to end up having trials for people and setting up huge watch lists and background checks. And, you know, if the government can't perform a background check on a bunch of people coming into the country because it says that it would overload their system, we'll make something we can background check absolutely everyone. And I know there's a background check system already in place. You know, how much better could it possibly be? It's just a property rights issue. And if anything, the mentally disabled and the people who are at the least advantaged by society, whether it be minorities or protesters or the mentally disabled or the elderly, they're the people that need firearms in their hands the most.
And, sorry, go ahead, Chad.
If those mentally disabled or those former criminals, if they're so dangerous that we can't let them have a gun, why are they walking amongst us to begin with? If Simpson's a murderer, and they've been tried, they've been found to be a murderer, and we're really concerned about recidivism, do we think that preventing that person from obtaining a firearm at a gun store, because you can't prevent them from obtaining a firearm from a family member or from a friend, or you can't prevent them from stealing one, but do we think that that is really going to prevent them? And for the mentally ill person, if that person is such a danger to all of us because they're out walking around and they're in a homicidal range, like, shouldn't they be in a hospital? Shouldn't they be undergoing treatment? I don't see how the taking away their rights to own a gun is sort of fundamental here. I think, the rights to own a gun are always sort of the first things that we look to try to take away. But, I mean, if we're being serious about this, shouldn't we look at taking away these people's voting rights and these people's, rights to be free whatsoever if they're really that dangerous? And if we're not serious about doing that, then don't just like screw around with the gun part, because that tells us that we're not really concerned about them. Either we are concerned or we're not. We can't be halfway concerned.
Okay, Adam, you have anything to add?
Yeah, I would say, don't want me to decide what constitutes a good reason to take away someone's basic human right. I mean, the right to bear arms and defend yourself, that's a human right. It's not granted by a constitution. It's protected. That's something that you're born with. And you can't just, you have to pick. Who gets to decide what reasons we're going to say, no, you can't have this right, but you can have this one, or you can't have this one. And even go as far as with a convicted felon. Somebody that has been tried by a jury of the peers and they've served their time, I would say after they've served their sentence to society, they should get all their rights back. I don't see why one mistake and one trial and everything takes away their rights for the rest of their life. Once they've served their time and paid their debt to society, as so many people would say, that should be done with. Why continue to punish them and restrict them of their rights for the rest of their life? So I just say I don't believe in background checks at all. I think if you're at a gun shop, well then I think that's enough to say you should be able to buy a gun.
I'm with him on no background checks at all.
I think there's sort of this basic
or no enforced background checks, sorry.
Yeah, there's also this basic sort of false assumption that if I'm a homicidal maniac and I walk into a gun store, that they're just automatically going to sell me a gun. If I'm sitting there muttering to myself like, "Oh, I'm going to kill all those motherfuckers. I'm going to kill everyone." They're going to send me out of that gun store and they're going to say, "Sorry, we don't want to be the store that sold you the gun that you used to kill everyone." Like, there is a sort of private free market enforcement mechanism whereby gun stores and gun dealers and gun owners have the right to say, "Sorry, buddy, you're creeping me out. I'm not going to arm you." And that is also a fundamental right of every gun owner and every gun dealer and every gun salesman to exercise their judgment and say, "No, sorry, go get it from somebody else."
And that's going to be the best defense against something like that compared to just learning their social security number from some government database. You'll never be able to read that. A government decision is never going to be able to see how that person's speaking and what his intentions may or may not be. No better than the clerk at the gun store. So I completely agree with you on that.
Whereas people in their local area who know them, who know their family, who know their history,
they've got a much better chance of saying, no, this guy's a nutcase. Like, we better not sell him a gun. Whereas, you know, he may come up on a background check, but maybe this guy murdered six people's dogs, and everybody knows about it, but it never got reported. So, you know, that guy, when you delegate the responsibility of background checks and of, you know, sort of turning down gun sales to unsavory types to the government, that guy's going to be perfectly able to pass every background check imaginable and, you know, may be getting ready to go out and murder a whole bunch of people. It's quite possible that people in his local town know that he's a bad guy and that he shouldn't be getting a gun. But, you know, if you outsource everything like that, then you're going to get what you get.
Well, if you murder dogs, you've already got a gun anyway because you're part of a SWAT team, so...
And, you know, my favorite, I remember writing about this, like, months ago on Jason Stapleton's site, is everybody's just thinking, okay, well, just the cops should own guns. And then everybody has just the shortest memory that, you know, he had a McDonald's. Everybody that was complaining about cops just unloading a clip into a 17-year-old boy who was carrying, like, a blade and who was not actually aggressing toward the cop at the time. And he unloaded his clip into a teen, and everybody's freaking out. Yeah, and the other two cops that were with him apparently didn't feel threatened because people keep telling me, oh, well, if the cop feels threatened, you know, if his life is threatened, he's supposed to unload his clip. And I was just like, well, then what happened with the other two cops? They apparently didn't feel threatened. They didn't unload their clips, just this one cop did. And everybody was outraged. It was all over social media. Everybody's like, oh, these cops are out of control. And all of a sudden, Paris happened, and, you know, you got these people shooting people up at a holiday party, and everybody's like, oh, no, put the guns only in the hands of the cops. I'm like, wait, you're a short memory. So now you trust the cops with the guns. That's amazing.
The Oregon thing happens, and then you read sort of every person that sits slightly left of Bernie Sanders basically calling for the government to drone strike and murder everyone in Oregon because... Once upon a time, the government treated people like shit in Ferguson. So therefore, we must now treat everyone like shit. We must now, you know, trample all over everyone's rights just so that it's equal. Just so that the protesters in Ferguson that got pepper sprayed and hit by beanbags and rubber bullets, so that they did not protest and loot and riot in vain. We must now murder the people occupying the highway rest stop in Oregon because equality.
It's just really funny. It's just like, so you want to rail against how you hate our cops and that the cops are terrible, but as soon as something happens, let's give them the guns. Only them. Just only them.
Yeah.
Come on, guys.
As long as it's your pet issue, which is, you know, as long as it's white militias in Oregon that are protesting against something you don't agree with, then all of a sudden you worship the police state and, you know, shine in the boots for... You know, Officer Johnson, while he goes to kick in doors, but then the second that he shoots somebody whose skin color and, you know, premise that you fundamentally agree with, oh, then it's goddamn cops. Cops are murdering everybody. Black Lives Matter, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, if you could just pause for 10 seconds and understand that the Oregon people and the Ferguson people both hate the same people. They both hate the state. They both hate the cops. They both hate the enforcement of state power, but no, of course, the race baiting starts about 10 seconds after the Oregon thing starts, and it's, oh, well, if these were Muslims or if these were blacks, they'd be murdered already, so we better murder them really quickly. It drives me insane because it's such a missed opportunity for everybody.
You know, and the crazy thing about that whole situation is just it's all over the place. For one, I definitely do not agree with the whole premise of what the Bundys did in the first place. This was an entirely stupid idea. I sympathize with what the Hammonds went through. That's the whole crux of it is, of course, government overreach with land. We just have a huge problem with the government owning land in the first place. And this is a whole issue of states' rights versus, you know, federal government. And it's pretty much the Bundys trying to hijack something and, you know, trying to point to a cause. I think it just went about it the entirely wrong way, and the Hammonds were smart to be like, no, we're going to distance ourselves from this craziness. And then so all the light was pushed onto the Bundys in this crazy fiasco, and the whole, like, you know, problem of government overreach is getting overshadowed by this militia stuff. And this is just feeding into the narrative of we need to control guns. And then once again, the whole narrative should be we have a problem with governmental overreach, which is now being overshadowed by this crazy militia Bundy's idea. So,
well, yeah. the Bundys are already tainted from the previous previous standoff with the government, where you know, they got Clive and Bundy recorded basically saying something not entirely sensitive to Black Americans. So now the Bundys are racist. So now this is a race-based issue. And man, if you want one way to just derail any productive discussion in America, throw race in there and just watch the pit bulls fight over the T-bone steak that is race politics in 2016 America.
State counts on that, though. You know, Basquiat even wrote about this. It doesn't matter. You know, everyone doesn't like who's on top of the wheel of power being oppressed. But instead of the solution to be ending the oppression and ending the state's power to control people's lives when they get up there, they just use it to push their grievances and their basically revenge-based schemes using the state on everyone else who may or may not have been at the top in the first place. And the cycle just continues on and on and on. And that's how it goes on. No one ever wants to think about, you know, hey, you know, our common enemy is the state. They just have a short-term memory, and they want to be treated fairly. You know, watching a ball game, and the ref throws a bad flag on your team, and then the other team does the same thing to you. Instead of being objective and saying, hey, you know, the ref shouldn't throw a flag there, they finally got it right and they corrected the call, they say, oh, well, now they should call it on us because it's fair.
Yeah,
it's they're getting the slaves to police one another rather than turning to look at the slave master and saying, man, that slave master really is a dick. No, it's this guy did this. It's like a sports team. It's like any sort of analogy where you divide and you conquer, and that's what they've been able to do in America, because we won't just say stop the race baiting for long enough for us to have a conversation. Now, as soon as the race baiting enters in, we're no longer talking about what it was that we were talking about. It's now blacks versus whites versus Hispanics versus Muslims versus whatever, and it drives me insane.
And to steer this back even more to gun control, it's just really annoying that this whole vague language is put in there about, you know, it's just like, you like what constitutes a gun owner, and if you like, and who is a gun salesman, and all sorts. They're just putting these vague laws in that could get like anybody in any sort of trouble, and it's just sickening.
They love that. They love the arbitrary, vaguely defined laws, because it lets them do whatever the hell they want to. It's like the word terrorist. What is a terrorist? Well, for all intents and purposes, whoever the hell we say it is.
Or, you know, you can read the damn dictionary that's already defined, and all the lexicographers all over the damn world for years have been defining the freaking words in the dictionary. Damn.
Congress doesn't respect the dictionary. They, in their opinion, they are the fucking dictionary.
The dictionary is culturally insensitive.
Culturally insensitive. I'm like, these people have, like, English was, I'm like, you know, our languages have been, the English language has stolen words from other languages to create our language, so we might want to pay attention to that.
That's cultural.
Yeah, again, like, we
want it back immediately.
Again, like, we've all been saying, it all comes back to education. You know, if more people were educated, you know, we would probably be here, you know, on this podcast talking about these issues, and a lot of stuff wouldn't get past the rhetoric, you know, that's on TV or in articles that you read. It really comes down to education.
Yes, very true. Well, that's why we have the podcast, yes, definitely. And, well, I feel like we're coming to an end point, so I guess this is where we'll have our closing statements on this one. So, Adam, you want to start out again? Any closing statements?
Kind of go back on the Oregon thing. I know we were talking about how we're comparing the militia to the Black Lives Matter protesters. And now it seems as if the freedom of the press has failed us on that. It seems like it's a wall being put up via the press. And I don't know if it's a government narrative or an initiative, some kind of agenda to make sure that people don't realize that they are all at the same person, and they do join together to rise up, because I think that would be terrible for the federal government as far as, what they can do to fight that. But to go back to gun control, we're constantly told that they're not interested in taking our guns, and I don't think they're anywhere close right now to take everybody's guns. But it definitely seems like there has been a speed claiming that is going to grow into that, and I don't know if we'll see it in our lifetime or maybe the next generation's lifetime. But no matter what, I think what we do need to do is put a stop to it as soon as possible. There shouldn't be any gun control measures whatsoever put in place by a federal government. As I said earlier with the drugs, I think states at the most could say something, but they could put in measures all they want. I know California has some of the strictest gun laws, and a lot of the citizens there are happy with that. I would say that's fine, but then again, you have a group trying to break off and get away from that state, so I don't think everybody in that state is being represented as well. But I think we need to quit trying failing measures, background checks, restrictions. Eventually we're going to get to the point where we see with drugs where people are going to, if they can't get the guns they want in the market, they are going to make them themselves. And you are going to see dangerous, no safety measures in making these guns. If guns may fail, people may get hurt, and they're being sold on the black market, and there's not going to be any way to track that and to help make sure that those type of things don't happen.
Thurman?
Yeah, again, I want to emphasize education. So, according to the CDC, people are 21 times more likely to die of heart disease. People are 18 more times likely to die of tumors. Two times more likely to die of diabetes and Alzheimer's. More people actually die from pneumonia and traffic accidents than actually homicides with firearms. This is a thing. Again, I really hate the whole rhetoric, and appealing to the emotion, because this really is not a big deal at all whatsoever. That's all I have left to say.
Christian?
Yeah, so Thurman made a good point about, appealing to emotion. You're more likely to die from cancer, a lot more likely. It seems to me that to follow the gun control advocates' logic, we should just make having cancer illegal, and that will solve all the problems.
And then we wouldn't have lost Bowie and Alan Rickman. Anyway, go on with your point.
Yeah, if we had just made cancer illegal, we'd still have Alan Rickman and David Bowie. It's all cancer's fault, and we should just make tumors illegal and all. It is just the ridiculousness of it. Your right to defend yourself is fundamental, and the farther you are removed from people who have political power, the more you need to defend yourself. And it doesn't matter what kind of defense that is, as long as it's something that you can actually defend yourself with. Why should we all have slingshots and the government should have tanks? Maybe we should be able to have tanks too if we can afford it, and maybe that would keep them out of militarizing our police and this and that. But it's just a property rights issue. Your right to defend yourself is the right to defend your life and property, and to do so with any means that does not harm other people. That's your prerogative, and that's a basic human right. And like Adam said, the Constitution protects that right, it's supposed to. It doesn't give you that right.
And people keep saying, does our Constitution really work? It's not a perfect document. And people say, well, why isn't it working? I'm like, well, because the people gave all the power to the government. So, duh, it's not going to work. Anyway, Chad.
So, as it relates to the Second Amendment and the First Amendment, there's very similar language in both of them, in that the phrase shall not be infringed appears in both of them. And yet, when the Supreme Court rules on Citizens United, they're ruling basically in the strictest way possible, saying we can have absolutely no restrictions on speech. Ergo, corporations need to be able to donate unlimited amounts of money to politics because money is speech, and there's no infringement. Yet in the area of gun control, no infringement doesn't mean no infringement, which is just, it's very interesting that you have the same institution deciding in different cases that no infringement in one case means no infringement, and on the other case it means, well, reasonable amounts of infringement are tolerable. The issue of gun control and the issue of drug prohibition are essentially two sides of the same coin, and that coin being, you know, and it's something that's very near and dear to our hearts as libertarians, which is, do we make decisions for other people? Do we pretend to know what is best for everyone else? And the answer to that is no. We don't pretend to always know what's best for us. We just happen to believe that if there is a person who knows what's best for us, that person is us and not someone else. And so, you know, when it comes down to it, gun control, drug control, you name it, you name the thing that you hate the most in the world, that you want the government to criminalize, that you want the government to, you know, people kicking their dogs because you really think that nobody should kick their dogs. You name it, whatever it is, just know that there's something that you do, more than likely, that there's somebody out there who would love to see you thrown in prison for that, whether that be owning guns, whether that be smoking pot, whether that be shooting heroin, whether that be, jerking off to pictures of animals. It doesn't really matter what that activity is. We have a big enough population and we're diverse enough as human beings that there is some busybody out there who would think that you should not be allowed to do that. You should spend more time praying to Jesus and less time jerking off to pictures of animals, and that if we just put you in prison and we take away your property and we take away your rights, that you'll have more time to get closer to Jesus and less time, you know, being attracted to Mr. Ed. But as libertarians, as much as we may not like that guy that's got a thing for Mr. Ed, and we may not want to be friends with him, we probably don't want to be friends with him, we stand up for his right to do that so long as he's not hurting other people. Unless you can point to a violation of somebody else's liberty or somebody else's property, it's not our decision to make. It's not our call to decide who gets to have what in their house, who gets to have a basement full of AKs, who gets to have 10,000 marijuana plants in their backyard. It's not our decision. And that's, I think, what understand that life gets a lot simpler and a hell of a lot cheaper.
In conclusion, I just want to say, basically, when people talk about the Constitution and gun rights and saying, you know, this is a document that was made, you know, years ago, they have to go back in the history. This document was actually in planning well before it was ratified, and we're not talking even a few years or even 10 years. Need to go back even farther in history and think about the history of it, because it goes even farther to when they came over from America and wanted to get away from the tyranny, and also that the Constitution was basically a set of what the government should not do to infringe on the rights. You need to make sure you remember that is what the government should not do, what the state should not do to infringe on the people's rights, and that needs to be remembered. And when people try to tell you that we shouldn't be trying to use a document made years ago before technology and humanity advanced, it doesn't make any sense to me, because there's still a lot of language in there that's telling you still the main point is what the government should not be doing to infringe on your rights. So when you allow people to give you the narrative that this is an old document, so let us reinterpret what it says and you should just be okay with that, be careful about that. And also be careful when they start taking away and infringing on those rights, because you got to think about it, what else are they going to take away from you as they're saying, we're going to take away the gun rights? You got to think about what else in that document, what else are we going to take from you? Because they're not going to stop at just guns, guys. You got to think about what else are they going to infringe on? So you might want to contemplate that when you start championing certain causes that may benefit you. Then you got to think down the line, wait a minute, what is it that I want and what is important to me that they're going to take away from me? So be careful. Think hard. Study. And we're going to close it out. Thank you guys for joining me. It was a pretty good discussion, I think. I hope you guys had fun. Well, hopefully you'll be on again soon, Adam, and I really hope that even though we had some strange difficulties, that you will be starting a podcast sometime soon, and you'll come back on to not only plug your podcast, but to join us and talk about other subjects.
Let's give a shout out to all of our new listeners from the Jason Stapleton program, because we, a listener of ours actually plugged us in the private Facebook group, and a lot of people commented, signed up, and probably started listening. So if they've gotten here, thanks to all you guys for listening. Spread this show around. We really appreciate Jason growing the Liberty Movement, and we like to think of ourselves as kind of a branch from his tree in the way he directed his resources towards organizing people, not only getting his message out there, but getting liberty-minded people together to do stuff like this.
Yes, amen. And guys, if you want...
It's pretty awesome of Jason to, you know, let people like Kim and myself make a place to get our ideas out there, and a platform and a really large listenership to tap into for something like this podcast.
Yeah. And guys, if you want to reach out to us, you want to discuss things, or you have topics that you want us to jump into, or if you want to be on the show, we like people of different political backgrounds, not just going to be filled with libertarians. We like to debate, discuss everything. You can email us at newbornlibertarian@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at Newborn Liberty. Search out the Facebook group at Newborn Libertarian. And guess what, guys? We are now on Stitcher, so you can search out Newborn Libertarian on Stitcher and subscribe there. And please subscribe on Stitcher, leave comments, rate us there. Also, please rate us on iTunes and leave us comments there, whether the comments are good, bad, ugly. Either way, make sure they're constructive criticism, because we'd like to know where we can improve, what you guys like. That'd be awesome. So until next time, this has been Kim, Christian, Adam, Thurman, Chad, and we will talk to you guys later.
Stay classy, Liberty Movement.